Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. Veterans Day, for the love of God. Yeah, Veterans Day. Welcome to All Marine Radio. Having technical difficulties this morning. Yeah. And they're kind of irritating, honestly, to the point that I need to fix them. And the issue is my motherboard doesn't see, you know, things I plug into it. And it first happened with my sound card. And now it's happening with a network card, right? So it's the wireless card, the Bluetooth card. So you plug it in, or in this case what I did was, you know, if you don't start your computer for a long time, you probably need to do that, right? So I did that over an hour ago, and knowing that these issues arise. And then when the computer boots up, doesn't see the sound card, doesn't see the network card, the wireless card. So normally you reboot it. Sometimes you have to actually take the card itself, open up your computer, take the card, desktop computer, right? Because I can't do my show and all the stuff I do on a regular laptop because they're just not powerful enough. Unless you want to spend about $5,000, which I don't care to. So I build them myself. And so I wind up taking the card out, putting it back in, adjusting how the card goes in, and then lo and behold, it works. Yeah, not funny. So I do that stuff. And then sometimes it doesn't work. Right now, the network card's not working. Sound card's working. So, yeah. So, I'm irritated with my computer. On a positive note, my interview to become a Big Brother is today. I had to reschedule it from yesterday. It was supposed to be yesterday, so I got online. Did all my online training that I was supposed to do prior to the interview. And then, lo and behold, discovered through the wonders of Microsoft Outlook that my interview coincided with a Zoom call I was supposed to be on with my family because it was Patrick's birthday yesterday. That's right. It was Patrick's birthday. So I had to reschedule it. So I'm looking forward to it. Somebody sent me an email yesterday, said, "Hey, Mac, hearing you talk about trying to become a big brother has got me interested. What do you have to do?" Well, so far I've sent through an orientation on Zoom. So you know, it's a county organization here in Orange County. I think that's how all of them run. So there's chapters of it. And then you introduce yourself, and then they kind of tell you about the program. They give you some pretty incredible statistics about the Big Brother and Big Sister organization in terms of the kids that are a part of the program have incredible performance numbers associated with them. So I have this in my head.
"And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country."
So that's my message today to all you veterans out there. Okay, so before you head to Perkins or Denny's for your free Grand Slam or whatever the hell you're going to glom off the nation's not done with you. In addition to rolling around and being a proponent of the elements of post-traumatic winning, I believe if you have the time, you need to become a big brother or a big sister. I believe that. Your life of service ain't over. Everybody got it? All right, write it on your forehead right now. BB, right? And then put a down arrow, okay? Which means this, when you look in the mirror, this person needs to become a big brother. Or if you're a female, BS. That stands for big sister, not bullshit, okay? So in case you get confused when you look in the mirror, who wrote BS on my forehead and put it down arrow like I'm bullshit? Now that means I'm supposed to become a big sister. So let me give you some statistics that go along with the program, because they're pretty interesting on this Veterans Day. And, you know, hey, for everybody today, guess what today is? Thank you for your service day. It's not Memorial Day, right? It is thank you for serving your country. Everybody got it? So today is thank you for your service. If you happen to cross paths with Gold Star families, right, as you always do, give them a hug and squeeze the shit out of them, right? That's how we do that, right? Let them know how much we care and have a conversation with them. But today is thank you for your service day. Now, let me tell you about that. So, hold on. You can hear me typing. So what do I want? Their impact of big brothers and big sisters? Annual impact in terms of youth mentoring. This is 2018 report. All right. Let's see. Researchers found that after 18 months of spending time with their, they're called bigs, the littles compared to those children not in the program were 46% less likely to begin using drugs, 27% less likely to be using alcohol, 52% likely to skip school, 37% likely to skip class, and 33% likely to hit someone. How about that? Here's some here's some statistics. 55% of the children in 2018 were female. 37% of the youth were black. 30% were white. 24% Hispanic. 2% Asian, Native, or Hawaiian. 2% were multi-race. That's surprising because that's the fastest growing demographic in the country. 4% wrote down that they were from another race. The largest youth group served in terms of age were 11 to 12-year-olds. And then after that, 9 to 10-year-olds. An estimated 60% of all youth served in 2018 lived in single-parent families. 29% lived in two-parent households. 6% lived with grandparents. And a small portion live with other relatives or in a group or foster home setting. 18% had a parent who had been incarcerated. About 80% received free school lunch, which is an approximate measure of poverty. So I just want to throw that out to you here on Veterans Day. All you veterans that are listening, we're not done with your carcass yet, okay? You still have things that you could contribute. And for those of us that are a little bit older and our kids are out of the house, yep, time for you to give a little bit more back. Think about that. Almost 20% had a parent that was incarcerated. 80% are at or below the poverty line. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. So, yeah. I would just... So what do you have to do? Right? What do you have to do to become a big brother or a big sister? It's pretty easy, honestly. You have to obviously sign up, and then you do the orientation. And if you're not put off by what you see, then you have to fill out some data. Do you have a car? Do you have a valid driver's license? Mine's coming due in a month. I didn't know that. Glad I checked. Do you have car insurance? Have you been ever arrested for a felony? So they do a little bit of a background check on you. And, you know, then they want references from you. Three of them, right? One family, one friend, and one professional. So, yeah. And then you fill, you know, so you answer a bunch of questions. And then you view, before your initial interview, you have to look at a couple of videos, and do like some tests that are pretty easy about child abuse. And then just generally what the big brothers and big sisters of America are. So anyway, just tossing that out there, right? All you veterans, it's not just about you today. We are still looking for things out of your carcass, right? Not just what you can get for free today, all right? So anyway, Veterans Day. Somebody else sent me something that said, "What was your coolest experience ever on Veterans Day?" And I told the story before, but I love telling it. The first time, I got invited to, my daughter invited me to her middle school. I think I came back from Iraq in maybe 2006. I think it was 2006. And it was 2005 or 2006, one of those 2 years that I was home in November. And so could you come to my middle school Veterans Day program? And I said, sure. So I went, and they had like a special roped off place where veterans sat. And then, but it was the first time. I mean, honestly, veterans were always my heroes growing up. I mean, I wanted to be a baseball player, but when I met and somebody said, yeah, he fought in World War II, I was like, oh, or he fought in World War or Korea or Vietnam. And I always wanted to talk to him, right? I told a story about my Uncle Muggs, who passed away on Saturday, but just talking to him about, you know, he had been to Germany during, you know, post-World War II, the U.S. Army of Occupation. What was that like, you know, to actually be there? And I was fascinated by history and all of that. And so when I would meet these guys, I mean, it was thrilling. These guys were bigger than life figures. They had done that. They had fought for their country. And I remember that day, and I remember we were in the gym. We were in the gymnasium at Valley Middle School in Grand Forks, North Dakota. And here I was. You know, they introduced all the veterans, you know. And then they did a recognition of guys who had fought in World War II, guys who fought in Korea. And I got to stand up with those guys for the first time ever. And it was just an absolute thrill in my life. And I remember going home that night. And I think I went to another veteran thing that day in the afternoon. And I remember going home that night and Catherine saying, so, you know, what'd you think? You know, did you think it was lame? And I said, no, not a bit. I loved it. And she looked at me and she said, are you serious? And I said, yeah, I am absolutely serious. And she said, why? And I said, well, Catherine, I said, since I was a little boy, you know, I've always looked up to those guys. And I always thought they were special people. And whenever I've gotten a chance to meet them or spend time with them, for me, it's always been thrilling. And today's the first time I ever got to stand up with them, to be a part of them and have them accept me as a member of that group. And I said, so it was one of the great days of my life right there in the gymnasium at Valley Middle School. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that same day, there was a monument being, Veterans Memorial in East Grand Forks, Minnesota, being rededicated after a flood. So it had to be, I think they moved and they improved it, and then they had the dedication. And if you're a Marine, and part of the Marine culture, you'll know this, but one of the guys who raised the first flag on Iwo Jima was a guy named Chuck Lindbergh. And he was from East Grand Forks, Minnesota, where this event was. So he came up to be the guest speaker. And so I went over there. I mean, come on, man. This is like really cool Marine shit. Chuck Lindbergh. If you see pictures of the first flag raising, you will see the flag, and it's a shot from below the flag, right? You'll see a guy with a flamethrower. I think it's a flamethrower. And he's got a hand grenade, right, hanging from either his harness or his pocket. And he looks like a tough guy. That's Chuck Lindbergh. Yeah, Chuck Lindbergh. So I go over there. Now, mind you, I'm doing a radio show. I think I've been to Iraq at least once or twice. If I'd been there twice, then I was on the city council. So I wasn't exactly Mayor McCheese in Grand Forks, but I was pretty close, right? So I walk in and I know all these people, but one of my favorite guys there is a guy named Tom Clifford. He was a tank company commander on Iwo Jima. He fought on Saipan, and he also was on Guadalcanal right at the end. Tom Clifford, great man. He was grew up in North Dakota, joins the Marine Corps because a buddy of his joined the Marine Corps and says, hey, you got to join the Marines. And he said, okay. So So he joins the Marine Corps. He later goes on to be the dean of the University of North Dakota School of Business. And I don't know if he was a president of the university. I thought he was, but he might have been just a dean of the School of Business. But Tom Clifford was a great, great guy. Tom Clifford could solve problems. There's a legendary story about him during the Vietnam War going up into a protest, and they were going to burn down the armory, surround the armory and do whatever stupid stuff that they were going to do, right? And Clifford walks onto the stage. Here's this World War II guy and a guy who all these people respected, and he went to the microphone and he said, hey, we're not going to do this today. This is not going to happen. And it didn't. So the protest just kind of fizzles out. So Tom, he's this legendary figure, problem solving. But again, he dealt with everybody with a sense of respect. And you always walked away from Tom Clifford. I had a friend who was on my radio show, and he was an older gentleman and didn't have a lot to do. And so he would hang out during my radio show. His name was Howard Webb. And Howard represented, he worked for a creamery. And Howard was a bit of a, how do I say this gently? He was a bit of a prick, right? And so he's competing when he's representing this creamery. He's competing for the contract at the University of North Dakota. And Tom Clifford, I think he was a president of the university. So the university decides, Clifford meets with Howard and tells him, you know, Howard, we're not going to go with, I think the creamery was called Bridgman Creamery that Howard worked for. And Howard said, you know, at the end of the meeting, he had turned us down. And I just, the only thing I thought was, what a wonderful guy he was. Right? Funny. I mean, some people have that knack. So Tom Clifford's at this dedication. So I think we'd already done the dedication, and we go to the reception. And Tom Clifford, into his 80s, was this robust guy. He played handball. And so I walk up behind him. He didn't see me. I walk up behind him, and I get next to him, and I say into his ear, I don't believe for a second you're fucking 82 years old. How fucking old are you, really? And he turns around and he starts laughing. And, you know, we shake hands and he says, I'm 82. He goes, I am. I said, I don't believe you. I said, you lie just as much as every other Marine. And he starts laughing. And I think he called me a son of a bitch or something like that. And he goes, come on, let's go over and meet Chuck Lindbergh. And I said, I've never met him. He goes, come on. So I meet Chuck Lindbergh. And I have my company guide on up in my home. And I had brought it. And Chuck Lindbergh signed the back of it. Let me tell you about Chuck Lindbergh. He was pissed about the whole second flag raising. He used to go around and give speeches and say, that was a whole staged event. The first flag raising was a patrol, and those are the Marines that ought to be recognized. Okay? He was not happy. And this is before any of the hoopla about who was in the photograph came up. Yeah. So, no, I remember that. I mean, that was part of that Veterans Day. And then I went home that night, and Catherine said, well, what did you think? Did you think it was hokey? And I said, no, Catherine, when you grow up your whole life idolizing guys, and then, you know, you get to, and then they accept you. It's a pretty big deal. And so, Veterans Day. But my message to veterans today is this. You got more to give, man. The life that took you into, quote-unquote, the service. Our country still needs you. And there's a segment of our population that could mentor, that you can mentor and impact. And so, the idea came to me after I watched that documentary, What Killed Michael Brown. What killed Michael Brown was he didn't have people in his life that were telling him what he could be. Michael Brown didn't value his life. That's why he was trying to trade marijuana for cigarillos the night before he was killed, and then the next day he just walked in and stole them. So Mike Brown didn't believe where he was headed in life, and made decisions in his life that ultimately led to his death. And so what can each of us do about that in this country that we say we love? Well, for most of us that have raised our kids, and our kids are out of the house now, we have time, and you can give that time. I believe the requirement is a minimum of 2 visits a month of between 3 to 6 hours. Come on, man, you can do that, right? Hell, that's just going to lunch, for God's sakes. Going for lunch and going for a walk or going and doing something. So anyway, I would encourage you to do that. What else was I going to say? Well, the show today, only an hour, because I've got some speaking stuff I've got to get ready for. So you are going to hear again. So when I think of veterans on All Marine Radio, what do I think about? Well, I think of any service, right? And so one of my favorite interviews is one you'll hear from a guy named Harris Holman today. And he was a Ranger on D-Day and went up the cliffs at Point Du Hoc. So it's one of my favorite interviews. We'll check the news real quick, and then you'll hear Harris Holman. But again, this is, I feel like I have to do education on holidays, right? Memorial Day, this is honoring dead, not thank you for your service day. Yesterday was happy birthday, Marine Corps. Today is thank you for your service. Yes, right. Finally, we get this thank you for your service. Everybody. Doesn't matter if you served in combat. Doesn't matter if you handed volleyballs out in the gym someplace in Germany. Right? You served your country. This is thank you for your service. You know, I think there should be a National Service Day, too. And that should honor anybody. Right? Anybody who serves their nation. And I don't know that, you know, I don't know that we do that. Do we honor our city workers, our state workers, things like that? Just to say thank you. Thank you for your service. Thank you for what you do to the interstates. Thank you for what you do for our streets. Thank you for what you do for our water system, for God's sakes. Yeah, life would suck without that. So, I don't know. Maybe it should be expanded on. I just got an email, kind of a cool email. It's about Montana Man, of all things. Yeah, how about that? And this is from a Marine. Do you have a contact for Montana Man? I was on the AAV that night in Somalia. I would like to make contact. Great podcast, Semper Fi. I absolutely can put you in touch with his ass. And so stand by. So how cool is that? So good morning to you here on Veterans Day in the year of our Lord 2020. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Good morning to you. Wait, good morning to you. Thank you. And this is dedicated to all you veterans out there today. And in the hope that you will find a way to make a greater contribution, right? Your country that is so divided, and not in terms of race, but in terms of, I would say, values and outlook, needs an example that we can be different, we can respect each other, and we can sit down and talk, and we can do that. And we don't have to make lists of who was on what side and blackball people. We don't have to treat each other like shit. We don't have to scream and yell. We don't have to do any of that stuff. And in addition to that, right, I would encourage you to check out Big Brothers and Big Sisters, right? Because in keeping with what President Kennedy said, right, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Right? I grew up on that. So in case you need to hear it one more time, here it is.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Now, I want to believe that he believed that, right? And it wasn't just some throwaway line in a speech. But the Kennedys were politicians, so I'm not so sure. But I believe it. I believe it. And in my life experience, the people that have had the biggest impact on my life are people that had big impacts on their community. And so, so in this dedication, right, find a way to give more, find a way to set an example, right, to people that you hear say, not my president, and I don't care who they're talking about, whether it was Barack Obama, you know, Donald Trump, or Joe Biden, look at them and say, that's bullshit, and you're bullshit, right? Your conditional, right, membership in our country, go the fuck away, man. Get out of here. We need people that will fight for dignity and respect and articulate discourse, articulate dissent, thoughtful discussion, and not this bullshit we see all over the place, right? That always, again, you know, from the social dilemma, fake news spreads 6 times faster than the truth. That's a problem. So I'm trying to encourage your better angels on this date, right? That you have more to give. Don't be afraid to do that. So this is dedicated to you. Happy Veterans Day. Thank you for your service.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Time to check the weather here on this Veterans Day. Wednesday, hump day. That's all right. Currently raining. President of the United States is at Arlington right now, laying a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown. And again, I don't want to... Today's not Memorial Day. Okay? Today's not Memorial Day. And everybody got to be savvy about that, right? That anybody who served, right? Anybody who served is today's their thank you for your service day. So remember that. But anyway, just saw the president at Arlington, and it was raining there, kind of gloomy looking. But 66 degrees, kind of warm in the Quantico, D.C. area. Down the coast at Camp Lejeune, it is cloudy and 78. 29 Palms, sunny and 49. Pendleton, sunny and 53. Camp Smith in Hawaii is dawn is breaking. And it is 72. We need some of that here, man. I'm not going to lie to you. It's cold. It's bullshit. Yeah. Sun coming up, cloudy, and 72 at Camp Smith in Hawaii. Okinawa, dark, clear, and 67. Down under in Darwin, it is dark, cloudy, 84. And in Norway, it is late in the day, cloudy, and 44 at the home of All Marine Radio. It is sunny and 54 degrees, looking for a high today of 64 degrees, 66, 65 tomorrow, 65 on Friday. What the hell? 66 on Saturday, 75 on Sunday. That's what I'm talking about, okay? That's what I'm talking about. The So, had an experience yesterday. Before we take a break, and I'll check a few news headlines, and then you'll hear Harris Holman. But somebody says Merrimack Cheese of Grand Forks, not East Grand Forks. East Grand Forks. Let me tell you, I got off on the wrong foot in my broadcasting career. I lived in Grand Forks, North Dakota side of the river, right? East Grand Forks is chiefly known in its history as a bootlegging city. A bunch of bars. They had like more bars than people in East Grand Forks, Minnesota, which is kind of cool. But anyway, so it's historical, right? Booze being run from Canada, right, in the United States. That was one of the way stations. And there's secret tunnels under the city and shit like that that people still find and whatnot. But anyway, there was a rumor. So I start to do my show. Now, the mayor and his family were pretty colorful characters. And there was a rumor that it was either the mayor and his brothers or the mayor's brother in that city had a car wash that did not have a water meter. And so somebody calls my radio show, and I'm relatively new, And they're saying, yeah, there's no water meter in that car wash. I'm like, what? Like, isn't that an important thing if you're a car wash, like how much water you use? Response, only if they have a meter, and then all these other people start calling it. I'm like, come on. I don't believe the people over there are stupid, right? Is everybody stupid on that side of the river? So the mayor's wife, right, calls my boss. Who is this new guy? Right? What's he doing? Who is he? What's he going on? So, yeah, I didn't get off exactly on the right foot with that side of the river. And I think, truth be told, there was no meter in the car wash. I mean, if you ask me, like, well, what was the truth? Based on the people I talked to, I don't think the car wash had a water meter. Anyway, so I digress. All right. No, but here's what we did a Zoom call for my son Patrick's birthday. Now, all of us have been doing Zoom calls for stuff, but we've never, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say this because it's kind of stupid, but we've never done like a family Zoom call. And so we did one. My daughter-in-law to be, the lovely Sarah, who's really smart. Anyway, she's like John Hopkins smart. Yeah, what she finds interesting about Buffalo Head Patrick, not so much. Okay, I don't know. So obviously she's an interesting human being. So, so we do this Zoom call, and in the middle of it, my son, John, who's in Norski, Norway, he bombs into it. It's like, holy shit. And so for the first time in probably a year, our family's all together in one spot. And it was hilarious. Colleen was in a parking lot because she went back to school for the first time. Think about this. My daughter, who's now a senior in high school, went back to her campus for the first time in 8 months yesterday. She will go to school twice a week. Yeah. Colleen. Back in school. 8 months. Now, let me tell you the problem with that. The problem with that is Colleen's a good student. Okay. If I would have been left to my own devices for 8 months, that would not have worked out well for me as a student. I wouldn't have learned shit. I would have learned how to have ESPN up on half the screen, right? A chat window with my buddy. So I'd be looking like I'm looking at the screen and participating. I'd have been fucking off the whole time, right? So, and trust me, they're out there. They're out there. Somebody told me yesterday, it's like, yeah, you know, these kids, they get these great grades on their tests. They're all getting A's because there's other family members that are taking the test. And the teachers are like, they're done with it. They're like, whatever. Whatever. Georgia's Secretary of State, this is breaking news from the Wall Street Journal, has ordered a hand recount of all votes in the presidential race. Joe Biden leads by a little bit more than 14,000. Let me just tell you, I think for the nation to have peace with the election outcome, that needs to happen in all those states that were very, very closely decided. And then whatever the outcome is, right? I was reading a article written by a math guy who said, what you're asking me to believe, I believe to be mathematically implausible, and I'm not a partisan. He said, I'm not going to tell you which party I'm with because that's irrelevant. I'm a mathematician, and I'm looking at the math model that says that people voted this way, but in the presidential election, they voted that way. And probability says that that's not right. If you're asking me to believe that, that the probability of that is minuscule. So I think what's been for me most distressing about the election is that if you watched it, you have the union of big technology that was silencing one side. You had social media doing the same thing. So you had Google, right? Not like if you searched on certain words, you were directed towards more liberal publications than you would be conservative. You had big social media doing the same thing. You had major media outlets vote essentially for a candidate. And not just with their opinion people, which is fine, but with their news sections. That's not good for democracy. And so I think for half the country, approximately half the country, who voted for the losing candidate, when you see all of this, you saw what we saw on election night, which was one candidate leading and then slowly but surely another candidate wins. The questions that surround that have to be answered. And then once they're answered, then we move on with this democracy. But just as we did it in the year 2000, I mean, it's painstaking and the mechanisms are in place to get to the truth. And I think that the American people need to know that. And then the next thing we have to do is come up with a system of voting that we believe in that should not be able to be corrupted. And to me, it means you got to go to a polling place. You got to produce some form of identification so that you can vote. And if we don't do that, then you're asking for your elections to be corrupted. And now here's why I think that the paper ballots are important. Grant Newsham's been on this program talking about what many believe is election fraud in South Korea, where the electronic tabulation was manipulated in the software and electing a much more liberal government than South Korea's ever had that was much more sympathetic to China. The hardware provider, Huawei. Oh, shit. Now, even if that's not true, that's a pretty substantial allegation. Yay? So, I think what the president owes the American people is to send lawyers down there to look at what happened and then go forward with the appropriate challenges. And then I think ultimately what George is doing now, which is the counting of their paper ballots, I think that's absolutely appropriate. And so the rest of us can believe in the outcome of the election. Because I'll tell you what, there is a shit ton of people. And I've talked to people that even support Joe Biden that say, yeah, that was kind of shady shit. So, I mean, I think for the nation, everybody needs to take a look at it. So that breaking news at this hour. And again, I think the same thing should happen in Pennsylvania. I think it should happen in Wisconsin, should happen in Nevada, should happen in Arizona, should happen in Michigan. And then we can, they can file reports, and those reports would be attested to by both sides and saying, yeah, this is ultimately what we found. And again, I saw somebody last night that I thought was very good. And it might have been the Secretary of State of Georgia or somebody that works for him or her. And that person came out and said, will we find voter fraud? Without a doubt, we will find voter fraud. Right? We always find voter fraud. The question is, was it substantial enough to have an impact on the election? Normally, it is not. So our job is to go through as we validate our election results and look at that stuff. So I thought, whoa, who is that guy? Make him something more than he is right now. Let me just take a look at the news real quick. And then we will go ahead and you'll hear Harris Holman. If you've never heard the Harris Holman interview, it's awesome. It is awesome. Sadly, I never met Harris. I never got a chance to meet him. And so before he passed away. And then even sadder yet, somebody broke into his son or daughter's, I believe it's his daughter's home, and stole all of his stuff. And I'm not sure they ever got any of it back. I mean, yeah, how shitty is that? So you'll hear Harris. He went up the cliffs at Point du Hoc at Normandy on June 6, 1944. In what has been resolved, something that we've talked about here a few times, but Army Sergeant First Class Alwin Cash will receive the Medal of Honor after the United States Senate passed a piece of legislation that had to be passed in order for him to receive that award. And the reason was because he died, so his family will obviously receive it posthumously, but he repeatedly entered a burning vehicle in Iraq, saving six other soldiers and an interpreter, and then he died a few weeks later because of his burns. So anyway, a bill was introduced, I believe, to extend timelines so that that he could be awarded the Medal of Honor. Hoping to honor a Texas hero, could Fort Hood become Fort Benavides? I don't believe in bleaching our history, but I don't believe that our army bases should be named after Confederates. I understand why it was done. I believe that as we rename those things in the base museum, there should be an explanation of who this person was, why the base was named for what it was, and ultimately why the name of the base was changed. But I support renaming those bases. I don't believe we should bleach our history, right? And so I saw Tom Cotton on TV last night talking about there's a move afoot at West Point to take Robert E. Lee's name off of barracks. Robert E. Lee was superintendent of West Point. Right? How do you expunge him from the history of West Point? So, and I don't believe we should do so. Now, do I believe that cadets at the United States Military Academy at West Point should have to live in, you know, if I'm consistent, should have to live in a barracks called Lee Hall or go to class in a? I don't believe that. I think Robert E. Lee's history and contribution to West Point should be certainly taught. He should not be bleached from its history. But I don't think you should ask young Americans to go live in a barracks that bears his name. So I'm not a bleach person, but again, I believe you have to tell a story. The Pentagon refutes a report that Marine raiders are training forces in Taiwan. Kind of interesting because this headline was around over the weekend and yesterday. The Defense Department on Wednesday shot down recent media reports saying Special Operations Marines were working with forces on Taiwan this week. Taiwanese and Japanese news outlets, which cited Taiwan's defense ministry and naval command, said Marine raiders were at Soing Naval Base in Taiwan training Taiwan Marines in assault boat and speedboat infiltration techniques. However, Pentagon spokesman John Supple, in a statement emailed to Stars and Stripes via Indo-Pacific Command on Wednesday, called the report inaccurate. Inaccurate means what? It's not a denial. So what does it mean? Though Washington has no formal relations with Taiwan's government, U.S. law requires the government to ensure Taiwan can defend itself. So what was going on? And it doesn't elaborate. It doesn't say, well, what was going on, but it says what's not going on. So stay tuned to that story. More will certainly come from it. Air Force First Lieutenant David Schmitz, 32 years of age, was killed on June 30th as he attempted to land at Shaw Air Base during nighttime training. His crash is blamed on pilot errors, leadership decisions, and ejection seat malfunction as his F-16 crashed at Shaw Air Force Base. It crashed at 11 p.m. on June 30th as he attempted to land at Shaw during a nighttime training flight. Investigators found Schmitz was upset after having failed his first ever attempt at air-to-air refueling and misread a lighting system leading toward Shaw's runway, starting a chain of events that would lead him to attempt to eject from the aircraft. Schmitz was one of four pilots participating in nighttime qualification operations, which called for the jets to refuel from a KC-135 Stratotanker before conducting a simulated attack against their defenses. But low on fuel after he was unable to connect to the air tanker, about 2 hours into the mission, Schmitz was forced to return to Shaw. As his aircraft neared the base, Schmitz misread the approach lighting system, which guided him to the runway. His jet was too low. The aircraft struck an antenna about 1,000 feet short of the runway, severely damaging the left main landing gear, which was the primary cause of the crash, according to the report. But there were other critical failures, investigators said. Among them was the failure of Schmitz's leaders to ensure he had conducted air-to-air refueling during the day before attempting it at night. Come on, man. Are you kidding me? That didn't occur for this officer. And when we have oversight breakdowns or failures of critical egress systems, it is imperative that we fully understand what transpired, meticulously evaluate the risk. You got to be kidding me, man. After damaging his left landing gear, Schmitz's jet briefly touched down on the runway on the ground in front of the runway before he abandoned the landing attempt to try again. What? So it impacted the ground? He had about 30 minutes of fuel remaining in the jet, so he hits an antenna. He hits the ground and then somehow or other gets back in the air. Schmitz consulted with an official at the control tower, the supervisor of flying, and the lead pilot on the training operation, who accompanied Schmitz back to Shaw and observed the damage from his own F-16. Those officials determined Schmitz should follow checklist guidelines for landing the plane with the left gear unsafe or up. The flying supervisor warned the pilot that he might ultimately need to eject if conditions were not favorable. They decided Schmitz would attempt an arrested landing in which the pilot would slow his landing by hooking a cable at the front of the runway, much like we do on aircraft carriers. Investigators found that the flying supervisor failed to contact the plane's manufacturer, Lockheed Martin, which staffs a 24/7 technical assistance hotline to field questions about emergency situations. Had the supervisor contacted Lockheed, the company would have warned the checklist that the officials had been using was only designed to work if the landing gear did not deploy and did not apply to a damaged or a hanging situation. During the probe, Lockheed flight engineers, this is horrible, man. Ultimately, the pilot, Schmitz, was forced to eject after the aircraft's tail hook made contact with the cable but did not hook it, according to the report. The jet continued down the runway about 1,100 feet. The left wing struck the ground just before Schmitz activated his ejection seat. The plane continued down the runway, flipping nose over tail. As it veered left off the runway, coming to rest upside down. Schmitz's ejection seat failed to deploy a parachute. He hit the ground, still in his seat, dying instantly. Wow. There is no part of that story where there is any silver lining. Unqualified during the day, attempted at night, and nobody says no. Attempt to execute an operation which is not even designed, right? Which is not even designed to be executed on the airplane, and nobody knows. He ejects. The ejection seat malfunctioned, and he dies. Yeah, not exactly the right story for Veterans Day. From the Wall Street Journal, a story about Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden and ties between the president-elect and the Senate leader have been very close over the years. If you saw the video of Mitch McConnell when Joe Biden left office in 2016, he gave a very inspiring speech about having worked with Senator Biden for many decades. So that is in the news. Markets continue to like the idea of split government, which means nothing substantial happens. So that is in the news. And then there's another interesting article, Biden's China tech plan, stronger defense, quieter offense. You know, and that's what many have called for, that, you know, that it's President Trump's bedside manner that alienates so many. But ultimately, the path that he put the nation on is the appropriate path in terms of an economic confrontation with China. But Joe Biden thinks he's going to be able to do that on the down low. Right. So we shall see if he's successful at that. Secretary of Defense Esper replaced. His final message to the Department of Defense. It's been an honor and a privilege of a lifetime to serve alongside you as the 27th Secretary of Defense over the course of these last 18 months. You can read it if you want to. You know, one of the things that, you know, I said was going to be a question when Mark Esper became the Secretary of Defense was he was a B-team guy. Would he stand up? And ultimately, I think he stood up and did the right thing. And if it cost him his job, then so be it. Not enough people do that. Not enough people do that. And, you know, and I said at the time, I didn't believe the Insurrection Act of 1872 or whatever the hell it was, I didn't think that it applied to what was going on in the nation. And then I thought if you read the statute and when you read the text of the law, it was, you know, if governments are dysfunctional and unable, not unwilling, unable, right, then that's when the Insurrection Act would be invoked. And so I thought Secretary Esper did the right thing. And if it costs you a job, then so be it. So be it. So, yeah, not a bad run. Top stories, Marine Corps Times. Marine Corps celebrated its birthday virtually yesterday. The Marine Corps has received its first shipment of its amphibious combat vehicle, which is a wheeled vehicle, vice a track vehicle. We have a new acting SecDef. And then top five stories in early bird today. Then we'll take a break, and then you'll hear another one of my favorite interviews. I played one yesterday. You'll hear another one today. But this I did in 2001. Yeah, June 6, 2001. So it had been before 9/11 happened. It's just a wonderful interview. Secretary of Esper fired. That's number one in the early bird top five. Number two is an exclusive. Esper, on his way out, says he was no yes man. He got accused of being a lot of yes man. Number three, Christopher Miller, Trump's surprise acting Secretary of Defense, has a thin resume for the job, but deep experience in counterterrorism. So he will be acting. Democrats blast Esper firing as a national security risk. And then number five, Polish leader signs deal increasing U.S. troop presence. Now, the Poles have been, interestingly enough, I mean, they've been all about having more Americans in Poland. Polish President Andrzej Duda signed a deal that enhances U.S. military presence in the Central European country and said it should be a symbol of a partnership that continues regardless of political developments. Poland's right-wing leadership has had close ties with the administration of Donald Trump, signing energy and defense deals. Duda indicated Monday that he would like the partnership to continue under the new administration. I believe our partnership is above political levels. We're waiting for the new U.S. president to take office, Duda said. So, again, the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement that he ratified raised the number of U.S. troops in Poland to 5,500 and moves the U.S. Army 5th Corps overseas headquarters to Poland from Fort Knox, Kentucky. It strengthens the U.S. defense presence in Central and Eastern Europe at a time of increased Russian military activity. If you don't know where Poland is, it would be closer to Russia than Germany is. So, one of the things Joe Biden will more than likely do will be to say, yeah, we're not leaving Germany. I hope what he says is, look, but I'm going to tie that. That's going to be a conditional decision on my part. Germany needs to hit its NATO spending marks, and it needs to restore its military to viable working order. Because while I don't really want to leave Germany, I am concerned at their lack of a military and that they rely on the American taxpayer to guarantee the freedom of their nation, which I think is wrong. Yeah, how about that? So I think Joe Biden's got powerful cards to play with Germany. So, so anyway, that is a look at the news. We'll take a break, and when we come back, you'll hear a guy by the name of Harris Holman. And I promise you, do not touch, don't touch that dial. This program continues, and it's just an awesome interview. So, on this Veterans Day, feel free to thank everybody for their service. Remember, it's not Memorial Day, but if you know Gold Star families, we always love them, right? Because they're the ones that truly pay on a daily basis for the sacrifice of somebody in their family. So that's part of this. But today is Thank You for Your Service Day. Right. And don't forget, check out Big Brothers and Big Sisters. So more Bomb Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.